I'm Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Jackie Quinn. Happy Thanksgiving. Today, for many Americans, brings a focus on food, football, and finding sales in the hours before Black Friday begins. More people traveled this year than last, says the AAA's Robert Sinclair, about 54 million by car, and then
about 1.4 million in the other category. That's a train, a bus, or a cruise ship.
The annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade delighted spectators with Santa ringing in the holiday season. President Biden took holiday pies to a firehouse in Nantucket, the Massachusetts island where he's spending the holiday. Biden was asked about the mass shootings in Virginia and then this weekend in Colorado Springs. He says he's hoping to place some limits on semi-automatic weapons.
I'm going to try to get rid of assault weapons.
During the lame duck?
I'm going to do it whenever. I got to make that assessment as I get in and start counting the votes.
For those hoping for relief on paying back student loans, the Biden administration says the pause has been extended. Our Lisa Dwyer reports.
President Joe Biden has announced that his administration will extend the pause on federal student loan payments.
While we seek relief from the courts, but no later than June 30, 2023. Which would give the Supreme Court an opportunity to hear the case in its current term.
If the lawsuit is not resolved by June 30th, payments would resume 60 days after that.
Author E. Jean Carroll's lawyers filed a lawsuit against former President Donald Trump overnight, taking advantage of a new law in New York that allows older cases to be brought to court. In February, Carroll told reporters,
"A little bit about me, but it's way more about the women in America who have been grabbed and groped, assaulted and raped by men in power and are silenced."
In Alaska, incumbent Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski has been reelected. This is AP News.
Looking for the perfect gift? Get him a shirt from Untuck It. Now you can get up to 50% off with the Black Friday sale happening right now at Untuck It. Untuck It shirts are designed to be worn untucked. They're the easiest way to keep them looking sharp and feeling comfortable. You can't go wrong with our super soft flannels and wrinkle-free shirts, so don't miss it. Up to 50% off for a limited time only. Find the perfect gift for every guy in your list at untuckit.com or 80-plus Untuck It stores. Untuck It. Shirts designed to be worn untucked.
Hi, this is Joe Cordell with the law firm Cordell & Cordell. Divorce can be complicated, especially if children are involved. If you're a father and want to protect your role in your children's lives, remember Cordell & Cordell. We've helped men with matters like these for 30 years, and we'd love to help you.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's Atlanta area attorneys, 404-793-0000, online at cordellcordell.com, 1 Glen Lake Parkway Northeast, Suite 975, Atlanta, Georgia.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Telling my girls about my Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard.
But Mom's early detection gave us time to make a plan.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to ALZ.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
We stand on the shoulders of the women who came before us.
Women who were told they were bad with money.
Women who couldn't even get a credit card without a man co-signing.
Women who fought for their own financial futures.
And now it's our turn to lead the way.
Join us at WeSaySaveIt.org,
where women of all ages and all budgets are learning how to save for retirement.
You work hard.
You make money.
Now make that money work for you.
Invest in yourself at WeSaySaveIt.org.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Oh,
Civic Media. I'm Jane Matt there with your headlines. Wisconsin's Republican leaders say they're speaking to Governor Tony Evers again after a two-year stalemate. With the unprecedented budget surplus, both sides hoping to find some common ground where they can negotiate. Representatives from the governor's office say his door has been open for communication. There is a date set for the governor to meet with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue, both sides stating a desire to cut taxes and invest in K-12 education. The governor out with a plan in October, which included a 10% tax cut for people making less than $100,000. GOP leaders say they want to lower tax rates, focusing on lowering the top tax rate for people making more than $280,000. Voss says he's willing to support funding for public schools only if it includes an expansion of Wisconsin's private school choice program. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
You are listening to pre-recorded content on Devil Radio. To see our station's entire live lineup, check out DevilRadio927.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Dan Schaefer, filling in for Kristen Bry. As always, you can call or text anytime at 844-967-2789. Jane, after that last segment with Eric, are you excited for another Bucks playoff run?
I am, and I love everybody loves Giannis, right? Because he's just so lovable, and he is for so many different reasons. But I have a thing for Brooke Lopez.
He's great.
He is great, and he's really cute. So now you know my interest in basketball. Okay,
he had a great game last night. Must have enjoyed last night because he had hit 7 threes. Incredible game for Brooke Lopez. We are going to be joined by another guest here coming up in the 12 o'clock hour, and she is here and ready to join us. We have Amanda Heidemann, the political science professor at Marquette University, joining us today. Amanda, welcome to As Goes Wisconsin.
Well, thank you for having me.
You wanted to talk. I asked you before we came on about what you wanted to talk about, and you said you wanted to talk about misinformation and the midterms. So we're still kind of rehashing the midterms here on the show. You know, obviously a lot to dissect, a lot to think about. But you wanted to talk about the role of misinformation, and in Wisconsin, I feel like we got a little bit of that over the course of the campaign.
Yeah, I would say so. And I think that misinformation was definitely a big concern on a lot of people's minds leading up to the midterms. And even though, you know, while political misinformation, we're talking about this sort of, you know, broad concept, includes a lot of different topics that can range from, you know, crime, immigration, issues of public health. Much of the focus was on misinformation about voting this time around, much of which stems from the falsehoods about election security and voter fraud that originated in the 2020 presidential election. So the big lie. So we saw some conspiracy theories about, you know, mail-in ballots. Some voters were getting anonymous text messages warning them to stay home. There were some threats of violence that were, you know, sort of floating around on alternative social media sites. But fortunately, it seems like Election Day came and went with what seems like relatively few incidents. You know, of course, there were some normal Election Day issues, you know, to be expected in a kind of large election that have resulted in the emergence of some misleading framing that does imply harmful intent. Particularly, I'm thinking about Maricopa County in Arizona, where they had some issues on Election Day with tabulation and printers. Even though election officials very, very quickly, you know, they were very transparent, very quickly addressed this, clearly communicated those issues and what they were doing to solve them. We still saw some of these issues sort of floating around the internet with, you know, sort of being manipulated with misleading framing and tying them to this broader established theory of election fraud. So we saw some of that cropping up. But there were also some claims in Pennsylvania focused on some misleading explanations about how long it takes to count votes, which I think is kind of also what we're still seeing floating around. but yeah.
Yeah, I think there's been, obviously, within the past 2 years in Wisconsin, there's just been a mountain of nonsense when it comes to the election denying, misinformation, you know, mischaracterization of so many different things. I know, you know, the ballot timing or the timing of the release of the Milwaukee results was a frequent topic of misinformation throughout, you know, the lead up to the election. So I think there was some real concern going into that night. I know the folks at the Milwaukee Elections Commission put out some information in advance saying, kind of telling reporters when they expected that vote drop to be, just as they did in 2020. Obviously a little bit of heightened attention to those votes in Milwaukee. It always seems to be such a focus in Milwaukee, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
So like you mentioned, that it's across the country, there was a lot of misinformation about the elections. But we also had a situation, at least here in Wisconsin, where the candidates have accepted the results. Are we going to be going back to a situation where candidates accept results and concede? Is that it seems so strange now?
Yeah, I mean, let's hope so. But it was strange times, right? I think we were all kind of waiting. We saw very clear concessions very early on, and it's like a proper democratic process.
Amanda, with all of the fear-mongering about early voting and the drop boxes, did this come back and bite the Republicans in some way?
I would say that, you know, it seems that running on a platform of, you know, election denialism was not a winning strategy. Until we have more data, you know, we can really dig in and then, you know, analyze that data. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I think we at least have one candidate who has not yet conceded. You mentioned Arizona and Maricopa County. Carrie Lake has lost the election. She lost by pretty much an identical margin to the 1% margin that Mandela Barnes lost by in Wisconsin. And, you know, the morning after the election in Wisconsin, Ron Johnson was all fired up, angry that the networks had not yet called his race. Soon after, he sent a statement out. They called the race. He was mad that there were some Republican radio talkers saying that Mandela Barnes was trying to steal the election. But of course, he gave a public concession speech shortly after the networks called and he conceded, and after he talked to Ron Johnson and all that. That's not what's happening with a remarkably similar margin in Arizona, is it?
No, not that I've seen so far. Maybe while we're on air now, it'll happen. It seems like a difficult claim for her to make, even in, you know, as candidates like even Oz, right, also conceded on election night.
Oz conceded, Mastriano conceded, Tim Michaels conceded. We've got all of these different examples of these, you know, election denying Republicans who had, you know, carried this mantle for the last 2 years of sowing doubt in the 2020 election. And I think is Carrie Lake the only holdout, or is this a pretty prevalent thing throughout? It seems like she's probably the only holdout at this point.
Definitely the most visible holdout at this point.
Yeah. So what have been some of the other, you know, examples of misinformation? We're here with Marquette professor Amanda Heidemann, who studies misinformation. And, you know, what are some of the other examples beyond the election denying stuff that kind of came up throughout the midterms?
Probably you're still seeing some residual like COVID-19 and vaccine misinformation floating around. But my focus has primarily been on election denialism and voting.
Yeah. So do you think going forward in Wisconsin, we've had so much, you know, the Gableman investigation lasted 14 months. We had a chair of the elections committee in the assembly, you know, call hearing after hearing to deny the election. Do you think the fever has broken at all, or do you think this is just a temporary pause?
I don't know. I'm not in the business of prediction. I don't want anyone to come for me. Let's hope, right, that we've broken the fever, that democracy lives to see another day. But I guess, you know, time will tell. If only we could see into the future.
Yeah. So any other, you know, as we kind of reflect on the midterms here in Wisconsin, the role of misinformation, yeah, obviously it seemed like it played a big role, not only in, you know, the election denying stuff, but also, you know, just kind of over the course of the campaign and with the advertising. Wisconsin saw so much advertising. Jane, I haven't seen an ad in a week, so I'm having like withdrawal symptoms here. I want to hear Mandela Barnes say the word resources over and over again. So we heard so many, we finally get this break in the advertising. I think, you know, the governor's race was, as has been well reported, was the most expensive governor's race in the country. More than $100 million spent on that race. And I think the Senate race was even more expensive. I think numbers I saw that had close to $150 million spent on that Senate race. I think it was the fifth most expensive. And I would not exactly say that the advertising was super honest throughout that process. What are your thoughts on the role misinformation played throughout that process?
Now, coming from like elite communication and rhetoric, absolutely. So I've been thinking about this a lot. You know, we know that like misinformation is always going to be a problem. There will always be a supply and a demand for all kinds of nonsense. You know, and there might be more or less of it floating around social media. You know, and I think definitely questions about how we should be structuring and monitoring, regulating the public sphere are definitely, you know, really key, right, as our efforts to understand why people are susceptible and how they can become more resilient, sort of inoculating themselves against misinformation. But I think the problem goes beyond just, you know, sort of misinformation floating around on social media. We live in a world where, you know, we can't agree on a common basis of facts. And, you know, part of the blame should be on elites and elite communication. I mean, political science research tells us that elites play a key role in shaping voter issue positions. You know, it's an elite-driven model of public opinion formation. So I think we also need to kind of turn our attention to these broader sort of macro forces.
What do you mean when you say elites there?
Our politicians, right? Yeah. People running for elected office, people currently serving in elected office.
So people that probably should be able to hold themselves to a little higher standard than, say, like the Facebook comment section under a news story. It seems like we've had a lot of politicians who have seemed like, you know, a human version of the comment section that have been more and more prevalent in our politics in recent years.
Yes, a sentient comment section, if you will.
A sentient comment section. We've had a lot of candidates these last couple of years that could perhaps be characterized as a sentient comment section. I've referred to Ron Johnson in the past as a sentient version of just conservative talk radio. So maybe the sentient comment section is perhaps a cousin of that. So we're here with Amanda Heidemann. She is a political science professor at Marquette University. She is going to be joining us for the rest of the half hour here. We're going to get into some other topics as well as we continue to just kind of rehash the midterms. We spent so much time, you know, in the run up to the midterms talking about what might happen and what could happen. And I think, you know, it's even though it's been a couple weeks, I don't know, time doesn't matter to me anymore. It's been 11 days? No, not even. I don't know. It's been some time since the election. I need to recombobulate myself. That's what I do as the recombobulation area. Amanda Heidemann is here. She's going to be continuing to join us for the next segment. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am the founder and writer and other stuff at the recombobulation area, and you're listening to As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
Stories come to life at your local parks and forests. They're places of wonder, and they're closer than you think. Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Chance for scattered showers this afternoon, otherwise overcast. Daytime highs approaching 50. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Lows dip down to about 29. Highs around 47 tomorrow. Bright sunshine. Mid-50s Saturday. Low 40s Sunday with a chance for scattered rain showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 43 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Goes Wisconsin. This is Dan Schaefer filling in for Kristen Bry. And we have been joined by Marquette University political science professor Amanda Heidemann, who is here to talk about what I think is a really important topic as it relates to the midterm elections and just kind of politics at large. Where we are right now is the topic of misinformation. And we were talking about in the last segment about the role that misinformation has played in this election and really has, you know, taken kind of center stage in American politics since the 2020 election. And for this next segment, I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, some of those root causes of misinformation in American politics. That's a topic that that you know well. So what are some of those root causes of those misperceptions in American politics right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, typically the misperceptions that result from these conspiracy theories and misinformation and disinformation that floats around in various media sources, you know, perhaps even just elites, right, communicating this in their advertisements, it's typically rooted in what we call motivated reasoning. So this shapes how people search for, how they evaluate, now they incorporate information into their beliefs. So we're often seeking out information that reinforces our preferences. And we view pro-attitudinal information as being much more convincing than counter-attitudinal information. And so some, you know, observable implications of this include selective exposure to our media sources, right, inside of our, you know,
those
media
bubbles that we always hear about,
bubbles.
Right?
Yeah, exactly, right? Not really hearing diverse perspectives. You know, and of course, we know that the quality of that bubble also varies greatly, right? There's definitely a spectrum there. And so then we also end up with this motivated processing of the information that we receive from whatever, you know, source that we're seeking out. So we tend to accept and recall congenial factual information much more frequently than uncongenial factual information. So, and then of course, then we're interpreting those facts in a belief consistent manner. And, you know, this of course then can exacerbate the continued influence of, you know, false or misleading information even after it has been debunked.
Mm-hmm. So those media bubbles that we're always hearing about how we're in, those are a pretty big deal. It's important to get outside of your bubble.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, I think I feel like we heard a lot about just the importance of that media bubble after the 2016 election, when people are like, how could Donald Trump possibly have won? And everybody's like, well, you're in your little urbanite liberal media bubble, blah, blah, blah. But I think I think we're seeing in this most recent election, you know, I think a lot of Republicans thought that a red wave was coming, that they were going to have these huge gains in the House. I think a lot of, a lot of the conservative commentators, be it on TV or on the radio or whatever, were predicting a red wave. And that was, you know, not a totally unreasonable prediction, right? That's typically what happens in a midterm election year. But I feel like there is, you know, an under-examined part of this is that, you know, liberals kind of went through this post-Trump in 2016. Do conservatives need to have a reckoning with the bubble that they're in as well?
Probably, right? the midterm results would definitely suggest that, something is definitely going on there.
Yeah, I think so many of the people in Wisconsin are just like, oh, Tim Michaels is going to win. Ron Johnson's going to run away with this. We're going to get the supermajority, you know, and such was not the case. This is not the big swing that we saw, you know, in perhaps like in 2010 with the Tea Party or you know, even 2018 with the kind of I don't know. Are we still calling it the resistance? I don't know. That term seems a little off now. But, I think those media bubbles, are really something that has perpetuated and is, you know, in the age of algorithmic social media that, you know, populates your feed with all these things that are, you know, like-minded voices, you know, what are some of the ways that kind of people can get out of that besides just, you know, reaching out and doing the work to find what the other side is saying?
I think maybe going back to following like local journalists, right, on the ground, doing the day-to-day reporting, and just, you know, broadening your media diet, you know, click away from the Fox News or the MSNBC for a little bit.
Truly, Amanda, though, and that's what I found most valuable on Twitter. I follow more journalists and historians, and I have just found that to be incredibly valuable. And I've learned so much, like you said, by opening up your sphere. And at least with historians, for the most part, they're dealing in facts. So that's always good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and speaking of just, you know, how to sort of inoculate yourself from, you know, not just broadening your media diet, but inoculating yourself, sort of protecting yourself against, you know, falling victim to false or misleading information. There is some research that suggests that, you know, there's sort of this method of what journalists are calling pre-bunking, explaining the tactics used to manipulate people, to people as a way for them to then protect themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Understanding the logic behind some of this misleading and false information.
So kind of understanding where the conspiracies are headed and trying to get out in front of it, which I think there was a lot of journalists who did a pretty good job with that in this election in particular. I think, you know, having gone through the 2 years that we have post 2020 with all the ridiculousness has perhaps prepared people for, hey, this is when Milwaukee's votes are going to come. This is how the votes are going to get tallied. And it's just, I feel like a lot of local news really did a good job with that. You know, a lot of local TV news. This is the life cycle of a ballot, like all those different types of things. Mm-hmm. I think that really, really helps people. And so, you know, hopefully we will continue to have a healthier media diet, have a healthier approach to misinformation. Amanda Heidemann, thank you so much for joining us here today on As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you so much.
All right, we are about to head to our next break here, but after the break, we are going to be joined by Greg May of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. We're going to talk about I-94 expansion. Topic near and dear.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Don Brown, host of This Week in Waukesha, inviting you to catch our coverage of this year's 2022 Waukesha Christmas Parade, Sunday, December 4th. The coverage starts at 3, the parade starts at 4. We'll be live in front of the Walk Radio studios talking to the marchers, the participants, the fans, and all the people that make this parade in this community a very special place. Waukesha Christmas Parade, covered here on Walk Radio 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Ready to shop till you drop? I'm Jackie Quinn with an AP News Minute. It's Turkey Day in America. Watching the annual parade, a big holiday meal, football, and then Black Friday. But bargain hunters may be disappointed this year. Analysts say even though there are markdowns on things like TVs and gadgets, they're still going to cost more because of inflation. President Biden is spending Thanksgiving in Nantucket. Today he told reporters he'll seek limits on semi-automatic weapons after the mass killings in just a week in Virginia and Colorado Springs.
The idea we still allow semi-automatic weapons to be purchased is sick.
In Chicago, police say a speeding driver in a stolen car heading the wrong way touched off a fiery wreck that's left two people dead. Alaska's election results are in. Sarah Palin was defeated by Democrat Mary Peltola, an Alaska native, for a congressional seat. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Looking for the perfect gift? Get him a shirt from Untuck It. Now you can get up to 50% off with the Black Friday sale happening right now at Untuck It. Untuck It shirts are designed to be worn untucked. They're the easiest way to keep them looking sharp and feeling comfortable. You can't go wrong with our super soft flannels and wrinkle-free shirts, so don't miss it. Up to 50% off for a limited time only. Find the perfect gift for every guy in your list at untuckit.com or 80 plus Untuck It stores. Untuck It. Shirts designed to be worn untucked.
Hi, this is Joe Cordell with the law firm Cordell & Cordell. Divorce can be complicated, especially if children are involved. If you're a father and want to protect your role in your children's lives, remember Cordell & Cordell. We've helped men with matters like these for 30 years, and we'd love to help you.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's Atlanta area attorneys. 404-793-0000. Online at CordellCordell.com. 1 Glen Lake Parkway Northeast, Suite 975, Atlanta.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The second of three defendants in a 2020 murder in western Wisconsin is sentenced to prison. A Gunn County jury convicted Ryan Steinhoff yesterday. Ashley Gunder is already serving 25 years for her role. A third suspect was acquitted. Bruce McGuigan was found stabbed to death in Downsville. Steinhoff will be sentenced later. The Catholic Diocese of Superior is out with a list of the names of 23 priests and other clergy with substantiated allegations of sexual abuse of children. The list is the result of three separate clergy filed reviews, more than a year of meetings, and multiple sessions with the Diocesan Review Board. In sports, Badger men's basketball takes on Dayton this afternoon. The Bucks host Chicago tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Goes Wisconsin. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am filling in for Kristen Bry. You are listening in Waukesha, Wausau, Oshkosh, Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, Richland Center, and in Madison. Do we get them all, Jane?
That should be everybody.
All right. Listen, all across the state here in As Goes Wisconsin. Again, I am Dan Schaefer filling in for Kristen Bry. We're halfway through another three-hour show.
You're doing
great.
We're
doing it.
Yeah, we're
making it happen.
Yeah.
We've got some great guests today. And joining us for the next half hour is Greg May, who is the Transportation Policy Director at 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. He advocates for policies that promote walking, biking, and transit in Wisconsin. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Jane. Really excited to be here today.
Now, you and I have talked a few times in the past about the proposed expansion of I-94 in the city of Milwaukee, the 3.5-mile east-west corridor that goes from, 70th Street to about 16th Street in the city of Milwaukee. And we talked a lot for when I was writing about this, at the recombobulation area, I wrote a multi-part series on the proposed expansion of I-94. That series was called Expanding the Divide. And you are part of a coalition that has been opposed to the expansion of I-94. You have advocated for a fix at six option. And shortly after the election last week, Tony Evers' Department of Transportation announced that they were going to select the eight-lane option. Greg, how are you doing with this? You've had some time to process the information.
I have. You know, it's a very frustrating decision for us. You know, there's a reason you release news on Fridays. That's when, you know, news goes to die. You know, that's because this project is controversial, if not slightly unpopular in Milwaukee. And so, you know, we're just really frustrated by, you know, how this whole process is going, but trying to drive people to the meetings in December.
Yeah, there's still going to be a couple public meetings, but you know, it's just there has been a remarkably little public feedback allowed throughout the course of this project. I think about all the different, you know, real estate projects that happen in Milwaukee and all these different communities all over the place who have, you know, all these public hearings about whether this building's going to be built, whether something's going to be redeveloped. You know, we've had so few public hearings on this project when it was revived by Governor Evers. It seems like such a missed opportunity to really hear from what people have to say.
Yeah, it's something our coalition, and I'm a member of the Coalition for More Responsible Transportation, which is, you know, a collection of neighborhood advocates, environmental groups, and just all the folks who are you know, opposed to the highway expansion. You know, it's something that frustrated us at the beginning, you know, these lack of public meetings. The DOT was trying to proceed, you know, with meetings that happened in 2012 and 2013 from when the project was first announced. And that just felt really wrong to us. You know, the project was canceled, 2017, 2018. And so to be, you know, using public meetings that were 10 years old and not, you know, kind of reducing engagement later on in the project just felt really wrong to us. So, you know, we've just been disappointed by the whole process, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And I think with, you know, with the new administration, you know, they had the Biden administration and under Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, Secretary Mayor Pete, has had a different priorities in running that department than we have seen in the past, and so I think, you know, that opened up a lot of conversation about highways and about how they have historically divided communities and how these, you know, highway widening projects have not solved the problem that they are seeking to, which is to reduce traffic. You know, it's the joke that we have is just, oh, another lane will fix it. Another lane will fix it over and over. We're doing the same thing again. We're adding another lane. That's going to fix it. Do you think it's going to fix it? Do you think this is the one that's going to fix it?
I think it is, Dan. I think it's going to be the first lane across the entire country that will finally fix congestion. It's going to be this one specifically.
Yeah, it's not going to be transit. It's not going to be fixed rail. It's not going to be, you know, finding other ways for people to not drive on the highway. It's going to be this exact lane that's going to change it.
Yeah. And you know, that speaks to some of the frustrations we have about this project. You know, we've been doing the same thing, expanding highways for 60 or 70 years in Milwaukee. If we could have built our way out of congestion, we would have done it now. But, you know, our coalition was opposed to this highway for three main reasons. You know, the first was environmental. At a time when climate change, you know, is wreaking havoc and we should be taking action, to be expanding a highway is running counter to goals both that the Evers administration has stated and the federal government has laid out. You know, the other reason is social. You know, we're acutely aware of the impacts highways have had on Milwaukee, disproportionately impacting people of color. And so, you know, to be expanding a highway that will continue that legacy rather than doing a restorative project is upsetting. And the last reason is fiscal. You know, we can always find $1 billion to expand a highway in Milwaukee. We find billions of dollars for interchanges and for, you know, this expansion projects. But at the same time, Milwaukee County's transit service is facing fiscal cliffs. And, you know, tens of thousands of people are facing service cuts. They won't be able to access their jobs, visit their friends, get groceries, go to the doctors. It's just incredibly frustrating that we always have money for expansions. But for transit and for local roads and things, you know, we can never seem to find the money. It's just a very frustrating project.
It is really frustrating. And I think it's right to highlight that difference, because I think, as we saw, I think, you know, you would hope that in this project, yes, there is, we do need to reconstruct this part of highway. It is old. Mm-hmm. What your group and the coalition that you're part of has pushed for is a modernization in this current 6-lane footprint, and not adding a lane. And I think the transit component that you mentioned is key when looking back at another recent example of this with the Zoo Interchange project. So the Zoo Interchange project, they proposed this massive redoing of the interchange, but the state gets sued. The state was there. Mm-hmm. There were lawsuits, and the state had to settle and that settlement went towards the creation of what was the job lines route, and it funded these routes that would bring people from the city to job centers in the suburbs. So that settlement funded about 4 years of that service, which brought hundreds of people to hundreds of job centers in the region. You know, the type of project that you would want to see expand and continued, and give people. People that, you know, kind of the economic mobility of being able to get to a job and you know, continued growth. And that program died after it was not funded after the life cycle of that lawsuit. So I think a lot of the transit advocates that I've talked to, you know, in reporting this project, feel like the only way we can fund new transit is through lawsuits. It's so frustrating.
It's incredibly frustrating. And, you know, we actually know that there are tons of people in Milwaukee who want jobs and cannot access them because there's, you know, not transit service and they don't own a car. You know, owning a car is incredibly expensive. The AAA, you know, estimates annual costs maybe around $10,000 when you factor in insurance, you know, paying off loans and gas and everything that goes into owning a car. So, you know, we know that there's a disconnect between companies who want to hire people and are struggling to find workers, and workers in Milwaukee who want jobs but cannot get to them. And so, you know, we are pursuing and hope to see permanent transit solutions in this project, because, as you mentioned, it's very frustrating that we have to keep suing for these temporary short-term solutions. You know, we hope this project at least will help fund BRT on 27th Street and in National Avenue, which are two projects that have, you know, broad support in the community, rather than just giving some money to run buses while construction happens. And then as soon as that money runs out, well, all we're left with is a $1.2 billion expansion and nothing for transit.
We're joined in this half hour of the show by Greg May, who is the Transportation Policy Director at 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. And we are talking about the decision from the State Department of Transportation to expand the highway with an 8-lane option instead of fixing at 6, which is what Greg and the Coalition for More Responsible Transportation had been advocating for. But I think one thing that did happen over the course of this project, and since Governor Evers revived the proposal to expand the highway, you know, there's been a whole bunch of different proposals for how to reconstruct the east-west corridor of I-94. There was even that ridiculous proposal during the Walker administration of talking about building a double-decker highway, which thankfully never came to fruition. But throughout this proposal, you know, they engaged what was called a supplemental environmental impact statement that allowed for at least some feedback, some changes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the project has at least gotten better. It's not good. Good would be doing the fix at 6, but it has gotten better. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And, you know, if we're going to be critical of the DOT, it's also worth praising them when they do things that are right. You know, the Fix It 6 proposal and, you know, Dan, and all the people in your neighborhood, and tons of people have been pushing for the stadium freeway to be turned into a boulevard. You know, that seemed like something that was impossible before this project started. But, you know, with this additional outreach, you know, the DOT, the county, and the city came together to say, hey, let's look at the stadium freeway. Let's look at this potential for reconnecting these two neighborhoods. What's the potential here? You know, and that's something that's creative and new from the DOT, and it's worth praising them for doing something different and going out on a limb. You know, that, and they downsized the interchange, and they're looking at some funding potential around 27th Street BRT. You know, these are things that wouldn't have happened if they hadn't done additional outreach and folks hadn't shown up to advocate for them. And so I 100% agree with you. You know, the fix it six option is better, but what they're proposing is better than what we started with.
Yeah, so they're improvements for the process. Credit to them for that. I, you know, as you're well aware, I've been an advocate for tearing down the stadium freeway and converting it to a boulevard. I really think that is just a huge opportunity there for the west side of Milwaukee, and really getting at, you know, some of the big picture issues that were created by these unnecessary freeway expansions in the past. I mean, you look at the demographics on that side of town. West of the stadium freeway, you have a majority white neighborhood. East of the stadium freeway, you have majority black neighborhoods, and actually some of the most diverse neighborhoods that you mm-hmm. see, some of the most integrated neighborhoods that you see. And so expanding a freeway there would be problematic, but I think, you know, conducting this study that the way that they are, and perhaps considering pursuing some federal dollars to do this as well. You know, it's not exactly a simple study. This highway goes over the Menominee River, so there are some complications there. So that we'll let the engineers take the time to figure that one out. And you mentioned that, and there's also the changes to the stadium interchange. The initial plans for the stadium interchange called for this massive triple-decker interchange, and it would be kind of the fourth major interchange between the lake and the zoo, which is just so much concrete and so many highways. But at least they have scaled that part of it back as well.
Yeah, you know, we're excited to see that, because you're right. You know, these interchanges are some of the biggest drivers of the cost of these projects. You know, we've spent so much money on the market interchange, the zoo, you know, these are billions of dollars we're talking about. And this project, you know, the stadium interchange as well would have been huge. And, you know, it just gets back to my previous point I was thinking about, you know, you know, we have so much money for these highway expansions, but, you know, we actually fund transit in Wisconsin, and I'm thinking about viewers across the state, or listeners as well, that we fund transit at a level about 25% less than we did in like 15 years ago when you adjust for inflation. So at the same time, when we're finding billions of dollars for these interchanges, our transit systems are having to do less with less. So, you know, any way we can find savings to make our interchanges smaller that are still practical and work, you know, I'm really here for it, especially as you mentioned, with so much concrete. You know, Milwaukee has faced some of its wettest years on record recently, and just adding impervious surfaces is going in the wrong direction for what is going to be a growing problem.
Yeah, we're joined by Greg May of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin here. Greg's going to stick around for the rest of the half hour, and we're going to be talking more about the decision to build an 8-lane highway through the city of Milwaukee. My name is Dan Schaefer. This is As Goes Wisconsin, and we will be right back.
Give me, yeah!
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
that dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Here's that song again.
Yay!
Here's that song again.
For the 100th time today.
Here's that song again.
It's gonna be stuck in your head all day.
Yay!
Here's that song again.
It will make you cray-cray.
You love your kids enough to watch that TV show a bajillion times.
Yay!
Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat for their age and size. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Chance for isolated showers this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 50. Southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 29 tonight. Overcast skies. Tomorrow, high of 47. Mid-50s Saturday. Much cooler Sunday with highs in the low 40s and showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 43 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. I am Dan Schaefer filling in for Kristen Bry today, and we have been joined by Greg May, the Transportation Policy Director at 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. We've been talking about the proposed expansion of I-94 in Milwaukee. I think one point we can get to before we move on to some other stuff is just that the fact that Milwaukee does not face the type of crushing traffic that many other large metropolitan areas face. And I think that is part of the discussion around whether or not we really need to spend billions of dollars to expand the highway. Not only just to spend billions of dollars, but push these highways closer into diverse neighborhoods in the city of Milwaukee. The city does not really have the type, like, we have a rush hour in Milwaukee, of course, but we don't have the type of crushing traffic that you see in Chicago or New York, or even, I used to live in Seattle. There was some pretty bad traffic in Seattle, Atlanta. You know, we're not a city like that. And so I think there was a study done a couple years ago saying that Milwaukee was in the bottom 10% of traffic amount of commute times for large metropolitan areas in North America. And so I think part of the goal that the state officials have told us throughout this process is addressing traffic. Well, Milwaukee has a lot of problems. We all know that Milwaukee has a lot of problems that need addressing. Is traffic really number one? Does traffic really need to get the billions of dollars? And, you know, traffic in general has kind of come back from the pandemic. Obviously, it went down for a while. But I think there's still a lot of people working remotely. There's a lot of people who have changed their approach to getting around the city, maybe biking more, maybe taking transit more often. You know, we have a BRT line that is going to be opening up in the city next year that will run from downtown to the Milwaukee Regional Medical Center. Anybody who rides a bus on the west side of town in Milwaukee like I do knows that there are a lot of people who take the bus to work at the hospitals over there. So perhaps that, in, you know, growing is going to reduce traffic on 94 once again. But, you know, it just seems like this is not the biggest problem when it comes to transportation in Milwaukee, getting on the highway.
No, I 100% agree, Dan. You know, there is a rush hour. You know, it's one of the frustrations of these projects is we build these massive highways for just a few hours of the day when there is, you know, a big There's a crunch. And the DOT said, you know, we could fix the safety and kind of logistics concerns at six lanes. You know, the reason they're doing expansion is because of congestion. And so, you know, that's kind of why our team was proposing the fix at six. We, you know, we could, you know, address the safety and logistics concerns, which, you know, kind of show up at Brewers games and at some, you know, peak hours. But we could use the savings from that and invest in, you know, turning the stadium freeway into a boulevard, making better walking and biking connections in those communities, and also, you know, promoting bus rapid transit. Because as you said, there's so many problems in Milwaukee. And when I think of, you know, transportation problems in Milwaukee, I think about this really excellent article that Jonah Chester wrote a few months ago for Wisconsin Watch, just kind of talking about the, you know, traffic safety, road safety, and the differences between the bureaucracy at the DOT and the city of Milwaukee wants to make more safety features on roads like Fond du Lac, you know, Avenue, and places where, you know, people are literally dying. All, you know, there's a huge, you know, reckless driving problem in the city.
Exactly.
And so there's just so many different transportation elements we need to be addressing that I, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of people's opinions, rise above the need to expand this highway.
Greg, I heard one of our competitors say yesterday, and he had cited some crash statistics and implied that widening this to eight lanes is going to alleviate that. Like you said, it's excessive speeding. It's reckless driving. I think eight lanes is just going to make that worse.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all ends up functioning, because one of the ways they've made this feasible, you know, Dan mentioned earlier the double-decker version of this highway. The way they worked around that problem, which is that pinch point around the cemeteries, is to, you know, narrow the lanes to the minimum amount allowed, which is going to kind of pinch cars all together into a point. And, you know, I'm not necessarily sure that that is going to be safer than what's out there now. You know, especially because right now it's a lot of slow moving cars at, you know, peak hours, which are, you know, result in more minor crashes. But, you know, as you mentioned, yeah, there's going to be more cars driving on this. And I think I would be fascinated to see what the traffic or the crash data looks like eventually after this, you know, project is done, because I don't think we're going to see this kind of safety results that are being promoted.
Well, and one of the big safety arguments that they, you know, they've made the safety argument throughout the process of wanting to expand the highway, but I think the six-lane option would address some of the biggest safety concerns in that corridor, because mm-hmm. I think some of the biggest safety concerns come from those left-hand turn,
yes,
getting off the highway. Those we're going to get rid of, whether you're going to get rid of those left turn lanes that no one wants, whether it was going to be six or eight lanes. So I think the biggest, you know, if the biggest reason is to address safety, well, the six lane version was also addressing safety. I'm very frustrated with the State Department of Transportation, with Tony Evers in particular. You know, he's a governor I agree with on a whole lot of things, but he's wrong on this one. He got this one wrong. Before we finish up here, I want to talk about another project that you have really been pushing a whole lot lately, which is to rethink the future of 794 in downtown Milwaukee. Tell me about that project.
Yeah, so the DOT is going to be spending another $300 million on 794. And so we're just starting a conversation with folks in Milwaukee about, you know, is there potential to turn this elevated freeway that runs between downtown and the Third Ward, you know, into an at-grade boulevard? We'd keep the Hone Bridge, so it would just run from the Marquette interchange to the lakefront. And the conversation has been electric, Dan. It's been pretty amazing. You know, we see it's the most popular comment on the city's downtown plan update. We're seeing a ton of social media buzz about it. And we were really excited this week to see the mayor kind of mentioned in the Journal Sentinel that he's open to the idea. So, you know, there's a ton of great reasons I can dive into if you've got the time. But, we also have a website called rethink794.com, which I would encourage people to head to for more of those arguments, facts, and renderings.
Cities belong to people. Cities don't belong to cars. We have plenty of options for cars to get through the city. You can get from 794 onto the Hone Bridge. This would open up so much interesting development downtown, and some prime real estate would be able to connect downtown neighborhoods to the Third Ward. I think it's a terrific, terrific project. We unfortunately don't have much more time to get into that project, but we'll have to have you back to talk more about that and talk more about the efforts that you are and the Coalition for More Responsible Transportation are undertaking as we get closer to those public meetings that we're having in December to talk about the I-94 project. So encourage people to show up at those.
Yeah, absolutely. Head to those meetings in December. I think they're on the 12th and 14th. And thank you, Dan. Thank you, Jane. So I really appreciate the opportunity. And, I'm happy to come back and talk about these projects again. Thanks for elevating this conversation and kind of sharing what our coalition is working on. So thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you. Keep fighting the good fight. This is As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Dan Schaefer, and we will be right back.
WAUK will be broadcasting the Waukesha Christmas Parade live, and you can become a sponsor. Call us at 262-232-8164. Sponsorship includes an on-air interview during the live broadcast of the Christmas Parade. A portion of the proceeds goes directly to the Waukesha Memorial Fund. Please call at 262-232-8164. That's 262-232-8164.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote, get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.